Bud, how you doing?
You know, I've been sitting here wondering about this Gregor Beach thing, and yeah, it's a little scary. I mean, all of a sudden, we've got you on the air, and now we're going to have you, like, on the beach.
We should broadcast from the beach. Could have, like, a beach party. That would be awesome.
Okay.
Kidding me?
You keep your suit on.
Get some Big Rock beers. Well, of course I'd keep my suit on. I don't need a stampede, okay?
Life is good. Hey, it's a wonderful week, you know. We've got some good football coming up. We had a very interesting weekend last week, and
yeah, lots to discuss. You know, it's funny because everybody talks about the penalties. Well, the Eskimos took 22 penalties in week one against Toronto. They were terrible. In the last four games combined, they've taken 36. So an average of 9 per game. They are now the least penalized team in the CFL. I know Chris Jones's goal was to average 12. They're below that, and really well below that if you take out the first game, mm-hmm. You know, Fort McMurray, whatever. I don't know what other excuse you want to use, but hey, it was still a game. But the Eskimos have been a vastly different team. When you watch them as an evaluator, what are they doing that other teams aren't?
You know, it doesn't really show in my evaluations when I'm watching them on film, but when I go to practice and I don't have anything to compare it to because I haven't been at other club practices, but this ball club is made up of extremely accountable, respectful individuals, and there is absolutely no question that every man on that practice field takes his position extremely seriously, and none of them want a penalty. None of them want to cost their team for something that they did themselves. So I'm very, very impressed with this ball club and how they conduct themselves. I'm also very impressed with the leaders on the ball club and how they diffuse instead of inflame. I've seen in my history as an official, you get situations in a ball game that just get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just like someone's just ripped the top off the can of gas and thrown it on the fire. All hell breaks loose. In the Edmonton experience the last couple of years, guys like Odell Willis, for example, what they do is go in and settle things down. Get
on the field.
On the field.
Just not on the bench of the other team.
You know,
I know. I'm just
stuff happens. Stuff happens. You know, maybe you just got lost. I don't know, but you know, this is Eskimo football. This takes me back way, way, way back to the Getty and the Parker days. These guys act, in my opinion, as professional athletes should act out on the field. They're playing the game. There's integrity to their game.
So as an official, when leaders of a team like J.C. Sherritt, because I watch J.C. Sherritt communicate with the officials, and there's always a respectful way, and you can disagree respectfully as
a
player.
Sure.
And I find the officials, it's like anybody in life. If you butter them up a little bit, and I know that you want to be impartial, but it's just natural for somebody to be like, well, was that really passing? You know what I'm saying? Yep. Sometimes that can play a factor. If you're always yelling at the ref, hey, Steen, you're terrible, you're garbage. Well, when you look around and you see that guy, the chance that you'll give him the benefit of the doubt is much slimmer.
I would agree with that. If you have people that are treating you respectfully and just asking for perhaps your opinion, why was that pass interference, or didn't you see that guy holding me on that play rather than, you know, talking about my heritage or my mother or whatever. Then, you know, clearly you're going to be somewhat more open-minded about him in the future. And the Eskimos have got a lot of those guys there. So, you know, I think that it starts at the top. It starts with Ed Hervey and filters down through his coaching staff, and they're doing all of the right things. If you lead the league with the fewest number of penalties, the fewest penalty yards, the fewest stupid penalties, if you've got the strongest defense and you have a capable offense, you've got a long year ahead of you. You're going to win a lot of ball games. You're going to go deep in the playoffs. So, you know, I think that this club is right on the verge of something big.
So when we look at the Eskimos and how their penalties have severely diminished, right? So you can't say with the officials, because I know people, it was even the last game, and I can't remember the referee's name off the top of my head, but I know Eskimo fans usually are giving him a hard time. They're not a big fan.
The Saskatchewan game?
Yeah,
was Al Bradbury.
Yeah, Bradbury, yes. And so Bradbury's a guy who has a reputation. Some fans think he calls too many penalties. Well, you watch that game. Well, the Eskimos weren't penalized very much at all. So I don't think it's Bradbury's a bad official. And he, of course, the other thing about that is he doesn't make the majority of calls anyway on the field. It's usually, you know, the referee has no say on the on pass interference or anything like that.
That's right.
But as an officiating group, would you take examples from the Eskimo games if teams are complaining and say, well, this team, this is how they play, and they don't get officiated, try to follow suit? Or is that considered not the right way to approach it?
I would love to. If someone would ask me, if someone on the Toronto Argonaut Ball Club wanted some ideas on how to improve their season, I'd be happy to tell them that they should conduct themselves somewhat more orderly. But typically they don't want to hear that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's just, again, a unique situation here. These folks are coming at it from a very unique perspective, getting the officials engaged with practice and working with the players to make sure that they're making smart decisions. When I talk to the players, I can rationalize with them. I understand that maybe there are times in a ball game that you might need to take a pass interference penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's a time in a game that a roughness penalty is okay. You know, and that's going to sound pretty odd coming from an official, but I play sports as well. And sometimes you need to send, or you want to send a message. And so, you know, fine, go ahead, pick your spots. But I mean, the club is doing it all well, and you know, if they can get down under 10 a game, then they're gonna be far and away the best in the league. You know, now if they can start succeeding on coaches' challenges, then maybe things will be real good for them.
Well, they've only challenged once this year, right. And I was kind of surprised by the one they challenged. They were looking for pass interference on a play, and there wasn't any pass interference. And I think that sometimes you're just a coach, you're like, ah, you know what, let's just see.
That was his freebie.
Yeah.
There was no cost to him, so what the hell? Put the flag down.
Mm-hmm. Bud Steen joins us inside the stripes. Now, the Hamilton-Toronto game definitely started with a bang, the onside kick. So what are official, like every official obviously has a different responsibility, yep. Right? But to open up a game like that, it's rare to see the onside kick, and especially because it was kind of a mid-tweener. It was clearly past 10 yards, so that was obvious,
yep.
Right? What are they looking for at that point?
Well, you know, that was an interesting play situation because, give Jeff Reinbold a ton of credit. The guy's smart. He's a very good special teams coach. He's very creative. And on that one, he had a couple guys up tight to the line, and then during the cadence, they dropped back. We now have the umpire in the offensive backfield on punt plays, so the referee has help so that he can determine who is onside. So on that play, the umpire, Ben Major, had himself in perfect line. Two of those guys were onside. The guy that got the ball was onside. The fellow that was furthest out, I think it was number 20, was ahead of the kick when the ball was kicked. But, you know, good on Hamilton because they caught Toronto with their pants down totally. I mean, the guy fielding the ball didn't even play it, for goodness sakes, and it was an easy touchdown. So, you know, that's a great play. Probably flipped Toronto upside down and scrambled them enough that they never got back into that ball game. Right off the top.
So now the rules are very different on the short kickoff compared to the punt, because we have a lot of people saying, yeah, you know, why is it no yards? Because everybody's, as long as you're behind the line of scrimmage, right? Because they were saying, well, which guys aren't, isn't every player eligible as long as they're behind the kicker?
On a kickoff, yes.
Yeah.
And if they're not behind the kicker, then they're offside, so it's a penalty against them.
So I didn't understand why they're saying, well, yeah, they're eligible. Well, everybody's eligible on a kickoff.
That's right.
Otherwise, you're offside.
Yeah. Unfortunately, on that play, we missed a block by the kicking team against I think it was the fellow that was actually playing the ball. So the kicking team cannot go down and blow the receiving team off of the ball, so to speak, to give themselves a free shot at it. They've got to allow the receiving team to get hands on the football before they touch the ball, before they smack
them. You can't run downfield and just hammer a guy?
No.
Oh.
The receiving team can hammer the kicking guys, but the kicking guys can't hammer the receiving guys.
There you go. So we learned something else on kickoffs. Interesting, some other stats for all of you CFL fans. 1-point converts are 84% effective this year. 2-point converts are 70%. So you look at it, 14% difference for that extra point. I'd argue definitely worth it to go for it more often. Obviously, they have gone for it more often so far this year. 30 attempts, 21 successful for 2-point converts, and 74 of 88 on 1-point converts. Now, I do want to discuss a few things. We saw it in Hamilton. Ball carrier, the minute the ball carrier loses his helmet, the play's dead. But if someone else on the field loses their helmet, it's not.
That's correct. If another player loses his helmet, he has to stop participating in the play. We had a penalty last week. I don't remember which game it was. One of the linemen had his helmet ripped off. It was in a Winnipeg game. Had his helmet ripped off, and so the umpire didn't see what happened after the helmet came off. He just saw how it came off. The opponent actually ripped it off, so he called face masking. And then, of course, the fellow that didn't have a helmet on had a score to settle, so he didn't stop playing. So he got a penalty for legal participation, playing without his helmet on. So you got to stop. I mean, it's all player safety stuff, and it started from the Eskimo player several years ago in the Machocha era, who ran all the way down the field and continued to play for quite a bit of time. And I mean, you can get kind of knocked a little silly if you don't have a hat on.
So let's say your helmet gets knocked off. You go grab it, you throw it back on. You can play with your chin strap undone, right?
Yep.
Okay, so the guy just has to get his helmet back on. He can get back in the play.
Get back in the play if the play continues that long, yeah.
Okay. The illegal contact on eligible receiver has slowly gone down every week, which is it's 41 total over the 6 weeks of the season. And considering then the first week alone, there's 15, you've seen that. Is that just simply the players adapting,
yes,
or are the officials adapting as well?
No, it's the players that are adapting. The teams are setting up their defenses slightly differently, and everybody has essentially accommodated the rule now. And it's basically what we had hoped was going to happen. It's now leveled out. I think we're going to find that it is it's just fine from here on out. This isn't going to be a problem. Frankly, where we have problems is in the area of offsides and procedures. It's crazy.
Now, is that because of, and a lot of people might not know this, but the umpire switched positions this year. He's not on the defensive side behind the linebacker. Now he's in the backfield behind the quarterback, has a better vantage point for offsides.
No, for procedures.
For procedures, sorry, yep. Procedures. And so is that, I can see why there's the increase in procedures because of that. And I've actually even talked to some players and they say, you know what, it's likely they're picking up more.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the players have changed, but now they're getting called for it. But the offside one is the one that doesn't make sense to me because you haven't changed the position of the officials to impact the offside.
No.
So why the increase?
It may be, and I'm only speculating, that the defenses are that much more anxious to get onto the quarterback because they understand that it's advantage offense with the new passing rules. So they're pressing that much harder. and they feel that they need that additional jump. You know, but that's just pure speculation. But we've got 99 offside penalties so far this year, and frankly, many of them are offensive offsides. So that's a bit crazy.
Well, it's the offensive offsides I find are way up over the defensive offsides. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like receivers, we saw it again. I know that they're trying to time it perfectly to get an advantage off the start, but it's almost like now they feel, well, I've got to get downfield quicker, so then they can't touch me. That they've, you know, the coaches to me, they've got to start slapping the wrist of players because the infractions pre-snap are inexcusable.
Yes,
like inexcusable to me that you can't time it like that.
You know, the one statistic that I'm going to try to dig into this week, I'm going to get a hold of Steve Daniel, the league statistician, and find out where we are at to week 7, 2014 over 2015 on holding calls, because it was my belief that when we moved the umpire into the offensive backfield that we would see an increase in holding flags. And I'm going to ask the question, see whether or not our holding numbers are up. We're at 104 holding penalties so far this year, and my guess would be that that is higher than it was in 2014 up to week 6. So there could be some contribution, so to speak, on the part of the officials in the increase in the number of penalties.
There's been some talk now that the umpire switched of, I know the NFL is talking about maybe add another official to the field.
Yep.
Is that conversation going on in the CFL?
Quietly, yes.
Would it be good for the game?
The game of football has changed very significantly in the last decade. The quality of athlete that is playing the game in Canada today is higher than it was 10 years ago. They are bigger, they're stronger, they are faster, and it just puts an awful lot of pressure on the 7 guys to see everything that goes on the field. We can't cover everything. There is just no question about it. Some of our guys on certain plays were overloaded, and frankly, the teams are beginning to understand where our holes are, and they're coaching to it. So, you know, eventually we're going to need 8 guys. But how we position ourselves, if we go 8, will be interesting. The NFL, as I understand it, are putting a man back essentially where a little deeper than where the umpire used to stand, and their position before was that he was right in the line of fire. It certainly was our case. He was right in the line of fire. So we wouldn't want to put someone right back there again, but there could be ways. It's very expensive. I'm not sure what the per game cost would be, but by the time you factor in airfare, hotels, per diems, and the pay that these guys get, it would be noticeable. There's no question in terms of the league budget.
But having another official on the field, you would think would automatically just increase the amount of flags, because now you have another set of eyes who's going to whistle in on infractions that otherwise might be missed.
That's one way of looking at it. From another perspective, you may have less for a particular individual to be concerned about, so he has more time to determine whether or not what he has just observed is an actual penalty. It may be within the spirit of the rule, but what he just saw may not be worth flagging and disrupting a football game in the set of circumstances that he just saw. What I'm looking for in officials are guys who get the big picture, and some things are black and white. If you're across the line of scrimmage, or from a defensive perspective, if you're in the neutral zone at the snap of the football, it's offside, and there's nothing that can be done about that. But a guy can have his hands on an opponent, in some situations it's holding, and in other situations it's not. So perhaps the other official might help in that respect.
It's an interesting one to consider. The other one is the officials, and I know we talked about it in week one, them adjusting, especially the sideline officials on their new positioning. Now that you evaluate them and you gauge every week how they do, are they getting better? Are they getting more accustomed to the difference in positioning being 10 yards closer to the line of scrimmage?
The deep side guys are, and we're now just sort of doing the fine tuning on it. Some of my recent comments were on special teams plays, not on scrimmage plays. Just trying to get the guys to be moving a little bit more on the special teams plays.
So now, why is that? So you mean they're just stand still on the sidelines, or what?
Yeah. What I have seen in some instances is the backside deep man not coming off the boundary, and the ball's 50, 60 yards across the field, moving up the other side.
He should come into the field to play.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Get in so he gets into the mix and he can start seeing the crap that goes on just off to the side of the ball carrier. So I'm wanting the guys to move in there a little bit more. But
now, what would cause an official not to do that?
Last year's mechanics. So he's still in last year's book in his head, so to speak.
But last year they were still down the sideline, just deeper. So wouldn't you have encouraged them last year to come into the field to play?
Not to the same extent.
Okay. Why is that?
Focus on athleticism last year was not as high as it is this year.
Okay.
Yeah, we're looking overall to see these guys moving more. We want guys that can really fly around the football field, because players are faster, the players are bigger, everything's happening quicker. So we've got to be there to stay on top of this game.
Bud, always good to talk to you. Next week we're going to have Glenn Johnson joining us. We're going to do a recap, a little bit more on the officials. And we are going to focus on two questions that we got today. We didn't have time to get into them today, about specific infractions, roughing the passer standard that has a lot of people perplexed as to exactly what's considered roughing the passer and what isn't. You might be surprised. We will outline that next week. We'll talk to you then. Bud Steen, Inside the Stripes, brought to you by Mobile One. Energy lives here. Let's get to Mijona Sports Center update. After that, we got Cassian. Also, we will take caller number 3 at Papa John's Pick'em right now, 444-1260. First Mijona Sports Center update.